Steve's own movie. Toy Story 2, which came out in November 1999, was even bigger, with a $485 million gross worldwide. Given that Pixar's success was now assured, it was time to start building a showcase headquarters. Jobs and the Pixar facilities team found an abandoned Del Monte fruit cannery in Emeryville, an industrial neighborhood between Berkeley and Oakland, just across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco. They tore it down, and Jobs commissioned Peter Bolin, the architect of the Apple stores, to design a new building for the 16-acre plot. Jobs obsessed over every aspect of the new building, from the overall concept to the tiniest detail regarding materials and construction. Steve had this firm belief that the right kind of building can do great things for a culture, said Pixar's president, Ed Catmull. Jobs controlled the creation of the building as if he were a director sweating each scene of a film. The Pixar building was Steve's own movie, Lasseter said. Lasseter had originally wanted a traditional Hollywood studio with separate buildings for various projects and bungalows for development teams, but the Disney folks said they didn't like their new campus because the teams felt isolated, and Jobs agreed. In fact, he decided they should go to the other extreme, one huge building around a central atrium designed to encourage random encounters. Despite being a denizen of the digital world, or maybe because he knew all too well its isolating potential, Jobs was a strong believer in face-to-face meetings. There's a temptation in our networked age to think that ideas can be developed by email and iChat, he said. That's crazy. Creativity comes from spontaneous meetings, from random discussions. You run into someone, you ask what they're doing, you say, wow, and soon you're cooking up all sorts of ideas. So he had the Pixar building designed to promote encounters and unplanned collaborations. If a building doesn't encourage that, you'll lose a lot of innovation and the magic that's sparked by serendipity, he said. So we designed the building to make people get out of their offices and mingle in the central atrium with people they might not otherwise see. The front doors and main stairs and corridors all led to the atrium. The cafe and the mailboxes were there. The conference rooms had windows that looked out onto it, and the 600-seat theater and two smaller screening rooms all spilled into it. Steve's theory worked from day one, Lasseter recalled. I kept running into people I hadn't seen for months. I've never seen a building that promoted collaboration and creativity as well as this one. Jobs even went so far as to decree that there be only two huge bathrooms in the building, one for each gender, connected to the atrium. He felt that very, very strongly, recalled Pam Kerwin, Pixar's general manager. Some of us felt that was going too far. One pregnant woman said she shouldn't be forced to walk for 10 minutes just to go to the bathroom, and that led to a big fight. It was one of the few times that Lasseter disagreed with Jobs. They reached a compromise. There would be two sets of bathrooms on either side of the atrium on both of the two floors. Because the building's steel beams were going to be visible, Jobs pored over samples from manufacturers across the country to see which had the best color and texture. He chose a mill in Arkansas, told it to blast the steel to a pure color, and made sure the truckers used caution not to nick any of it. He also insisted that all the beams be bolted together, not welded. We sandblasted the steel and clear-coated it, so you can actually see what it's like, he recalled. When the steel workers were putting up the beams, they would bring their families on the weekend to show them. The wackiest piece of serendipity was the Love Lounge. One of the animators found a small door on the back wall when he moved into his office. It opened to a low corridor that you could crawl through to a room clad in sheet metal that provided access to the air conditioning valves. He and his colleagues commandeered the secret room, festooned it with Christmas lights and lava lamps, and furnished it with benches upholstered in animal prints, tasseled pillows, a fold-up cocktail table, liquor bottles, bar equipment, and napkins that read, "The Love Lounge." A video camera installed in the corridor allowed occupants to monitor who might be approaching. Lassiter and Jobs brought important visitors there and had them sign the wall. The signatures include Michael Eisner, Roy Disney, Tim Allen, and Randy Newman. Jobs loved it, but since he wasn't a drinker, he sometimes referred to it as the meditation room. It reminded him, he said, of the one that he and Daniel Kottke had at Reed, but without the acid.